Samuel Hunter is now officially a genius. The Idaho playwright was one of 21 people announced this week as a winner of the $625,000 MacArthur Foundation Fellowship, commonly known as a genius grant. He lives in New York now, but Hunter, who grew up in Moscow, often sets his plays in Idaho. He has one premiering in New York in November called Pocatello, and his play Rest begins a run tonight in Chicago. Hunter knew about the MacArthur grant for 2 weeks before he was allowed to talk about it. He told our Adam Cotterell that's because the awards are given secretly, and it came as a complete surprise.
It was completely out of the blue. I didn't know that I had been nominated, and so this was a complete surprise in every sense. And so I had just gotten back from Chicago, actually where I am right now. I've been in rehearsals for a play that we're opening on Friday, but I went back to New York just for about 6 days. And it was a day after Labor Day, and I was just at my desk working, and my phone rang, and it was a Chicago number, and so I thought it was somebody at the theater, but since I was in the middle of something, I didn't answer it the first time. But then about 6 or 7 minutes later, they called again, so I answered it, and a woman said, "Is this Samuel Hunter?" And I said, "Yes," and she said, "Are you somewhere where you can speak confidentially?" Which totally freaked me out. I thought that something really bad had happened. But I said, "Yes, I'm just in my apartment." And she said, "Well, you've been awarded a MacArthur Fellowship." And immediately it was just kind of, I said this to the foundation. It was like an out-of-body experience. Like I've never really had an experience like that, because it's something like this is so large, and it comes so out of the blue. It would have been one thing if I was in the running, but the fact that I didn't know I was up for this, and really the thought of it hadn't crossed my mind, because it felt just so distant, you know what I mean? Like it just felt like something that it wasn't even on my radar. So it really, and it really, honestly, it hasn't totally settled in my body yet. Like it still feels almost a little bit fictional. It's getting real day by day, and certainly the fact that I can talk about it now helps. but yeah, it's still quite strange in the best possible way.
What did the foundation tell you about why you were selected?
Well, it's something, they've been wonderful, but they also, this process is very secretive, and they keep it very much behind closed doors. And so I don't know who nominated me. I don't know what it was that led them to ultimately select me. I mean, I don't know. I because what I think I do is like something very simple and straightforward. Like I'm just telling these stories and trying to tell them as sort of humanely and truthfully and honestly as I can. And just really just trying to create, a foundation upon which, an audience member and a performer can make a true, honest connection and actually share something. So I'm not sure exactly what it was that they responded to so much.
They didn't say, "We really like this about you or your work."
I mean, they've posted something very nice on the foundation's website that's sort of about my work, and I think maybe something they're responding to is the fact that I write about, people who don't normally populate our stages, and also settings that are kind of uncommon. These my play Bright New Boise is set in the break room of a Hobby Lobby, and I just had a play open in New York called A Few that's set in a trailer off of an interstate, and the play that I'm opening here in Chicago right now is set in a rest home that's about to shut down. So I think they're uncommon in their settings and their approach, but ultimately what I'm trying to do with the plays, which maybe this is what they're responding to, is I'm trying to get at these, in these very quotidian settings, I'm trying to get at these sort of big operatic ideas about faith and doubt and human connection. So, and I think that's how they articulated, the reason they are drawn to my work.
You've had an impressive career already, but the MacArthur Foundation says its fellowships are not for past work, but sort of an investment in future potential. How do you think getting this will affect your career?
I'm still tossing that around in my head. I mean, that was really when I first started actually considering what this means for me. That really resonated with me. This idea that it's really not an award for past accomplishment. That this is really, you know, an investment in what I'm going to do in the future. So, you know, at first, you know, you think, well, maybe this is going to change my whole life, and maybe I need to change my whole approach, and maybe I need to do something drastically different and reinvent myself as an artist. But then I thought, well, no, that's exactly the opposite of what I should be doing, because this, what they're saying is you need to keep working, you need to keep going forward. And so as much as possible, I think I need to not change course in my writing, but at the same time continue to take risks. And I think that's really what this allows me to do, is continue to take risks, because my life for the next several years is not going to be dependent upon the royalties from a play. You know what I mean? That because before this, it was really like my livelihood was dependent on how many tickets were sold to a certain production of one of my plays. But now that that's no longer the case, I think, you know, I can just focus on the work itself and continue to invest in it in the only way I know how, which is just trying to be true to these people and these stories.
It seems like that would take a lot of pressure off you in some ways. But in other ways, does the grant come with pressure attached, expectations, even though the grants are no strings attached and they say there are no expectations about what you have to do?
I mean, you definitely feel that sort of surge of anxiety when you first start considering it, and you think like, whoa, I need to really step up my game, you know, because I mean, I'm with a very impressive group of people, and it's very humbling to be on a list like this. And it's also just very humbling for a foundation to, you know, for a group of people to just sort of pluck you out of a group and say, we have faith in what you're doing, so keep going forward. But as much as possible, I'm trying not to let it affect me too much, because I think that, you know, the one thing I really don't want this to do is to let this change how I write plays or why I write plays. So, you know, I think any pressure, it would really be self-imposed, you know, so I'm trying to, as much as possible, not let that get to me.
I think self...
And I'm only being marginally successful at it so far, so we'll see.
I think self-imposed pressure is the realest kind.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, in my case, definitely.
How do you feel about being saddled with the term genius?
I mean, it's not something that this is not a term that the foundation uses. This is actually, you know, like, they just call it a fellowship. The term genius is just something that the media has assigned to it over the years. And I can tell you for certain that I am not a genius. I mean, anybody who has ever been driving while I'm trying to give them directions can attest to that fact. I am most decidedly not a genius. You know, what this is not really, you know, it has nothing to do with like IQ or anything like that, which I've never taken an IQ test and I doubt it's that high. This is, you know, it's, the grant is just for creativity. And in my mind, creativity only comes through work. It's really not about like sitting back and letting the muses inspire you. It's really just, it's about work. It's about sitting down and actually doing the work.
Even though it's not officially called a genius grant, that is the name associated with it. I'm a big fan of the radio show Radio Lab, and one of the producers of that won one of these grants, and they're always kidding him about it on the show. Are you going to have to live with that the rest of your life, with, you know, people saying, hey, genius?
Well, certainly for the last 24 hours I have been, which have been very sweet, but also very embarrassing. You know, I'm in rehearsal right now for this play. We're in previews right now, and we open it tomorrow night. And definitely when I went to rehearsal tomorrow, there was a lot of razzing. So we'll see. I'm sure it'll probably calm down eventually.
I want to talk about your work just a little bit. You set a lot of your plays in Idaho, though there is generally very little in them that's specific to Idaho. They could happen anywhere in the country. So why bother?
I think for me, I mean, there's a couple of reasons. You know, when I first started writing plays very early on, you know, like I went to college for playwriting. So like my freshman year, when I was still figuring out what I wanted to do and who I was as a writer, I mean, I wrote very different kinds of plays. I remember like one of the first plays I wrote was like a historical drama about Robert Schumann. And you know, I was just sort of like desperately trying to find my voice. And then all of a sudden I wrote this really simple play about a family in Idaho. And, you know, it was young and it didn't totally work. And it was, you know, it was, you know, not anything fantastic or anything. But there was just something that really resonated for me in a really deep way. And so I think you're totally right that these plays, there's nothing, like I say, there's nothing quintessentially Idahoan about these plays. And I set these plays in places very deliberately that could be anywhere in the country, because I don't want to do something that's just like, you know, like let's look at this state that we don't often see on our stages. It's really not about that. I don't, you know, these aren't like regional plays that are sort of like illuminating the Idahoan experience for a larger audience. It's really about something larger. You know, it's really about like non-urban America, you know. But for me, setting them in Idaho grounds them for me personally in a way that allows me to invest myself in a really active way. Because even though, you know, I've been in New York pretty much my entire adult life, and I'm definitely like a resident of New York City, and I feel like that's my home, but I still feel like my heart and to a certain extent my soul is still in Idaho. I still feel like deeply, deeply connected to that place in a very complicated way. And I think the plays are about teasing out that complex connection.
Why is it a complicated way?
Well, I think like anybody has a complex relationship to where they grew up. You know what I mean? I love Idaho, but you know, I had both wonderful experiences and complicated experiences in Idaho. You know, I think that's, you know, that's something I continue to articulate in my own writing.
How do you think growing up in Moscow shaped you personally and shaped your work?
I think Moscow is like a pretty wonderful place to grow up, because it's got that, like, because it's this small town in Idaho, but it's also got this really good university. And so, you know, at the same time, I had this like what I think of as sort of like a small town experience growing up there. But I also, you know, when I was 16 or 17, I saw Angels in America at the University of Idaho Theater, you know, and there's very few places I think that where you can sort of like get that experience, that I had an outlet for. There was sort of like a window to the wider culture there, but it was also still a small town. And I think that's sort of reflected in the plays that I ultimately write, you know. And I also, you know, growing up in that town, you know, I had a lot of friends who were very deeply religious, a lot of friends and mentors who were deeply religious, and I'm constantly, you know, writing about religion in my plays. And, you know, I'd have these experiences in high school. Like, I'd have these really complex, you know, oftentimes troubling conversations with friends and mentors about God and faith. And then a couple hours later, I would go do my shift at the Walmart where my first high school job was. So, and I think a lot of my plays sort of rest somewhere in that tension between the divine and the banal.
You have an upcoming play called Pocatello. Can you tell me what it's about?
Yeah, Pocatello. It's set in Pocatello, but it's a entirely fictionalized Pocatello, and the entire play is set. I'm going to be a little elusive here because I don't want to get a cease and desist letter, but it's set on the floor of a immediately recognizable Italian themed franchise restaurant, and it's basically about this guy who feels deeply, deeply connected to his community, and whose family goes back several generations in his community, but he's seeing it sort of paved over with strip malls and Walmarts and highways. And he's holding on to this restaurant that he manages as the sort of like last bastion of community in his hometown. And then the sort of larger spiritual yearning in the play is just about this guy crying out for human connection in an increasingly isolating landscape.
I think that's all of my serious questions. I've got one, a little bit frivolous one, and that's what are your plans for the money, or your dreams for the money, if that's as far as you've gotten?
I haven't even like started to think about it, really, honestly. You know, my husband and I just bought an apartment, and that was a big risk for us, you know, to like buying an apartment in New York City. And so this is definitely like kind of releasing that pressure. But again, you know, when I first got it, I was like, well, should I do something big and kind of, you know, crazy? Should I make some big crazy art project that I wouldn't have done before, wouldn't have the money to do before? But I think the more that I think about it, this is really just giving me the ability to keep going forward with the pressure of money taken away and like with the ability to perhaps say no to a few things that wouldn't be as creatively fulfilling as something else. So more than anything, it's just going to allow me to maintain and keep going forward and focus on the work.
Have you had pressure to pay the bills in the past?
Oh yeah. I mean, so much of being an artist is figuring out the economy of being an artist in America in 2014. And the sort of like the terrible joke of being an artist, it's that it's really helpful to live in a place like New York City because, you know, especially being a theater artist, that's where a ton of theater in this country is, in New York. And it's a great place to get started in the theater. But the terrible joke is that it's probably the hardest place in the country for an artist to survive because the cost of living is so high. And my husband's also in the theater, and he's employed at the theater right now. He's a dramaturg, and he's full time at the theater now. But you know, for the vast majority of our 20s, we were desperately scraping together a life through adjunct teaching and various odd jobs and you know, hopping from illegal sublet to illegal sublet. So yeah, our lives are definitely different now, but there was several years of that.
Did you ever have to go back and work at a Walmart in between shows?
No, but the thought really did occur to me more than once. That thought did occur to me. It was like, well, I could always just go to, you know, there aren't any Walmarts in New York, but there are Targets. And I more than once in my 20s, I was like, well, I could just go to the Target and work, I guess. Luckily, it never came to that.